Live from the Findlay Toyota Studios, it's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
All right, here we go to Thursday. Cofield, Steve Cofield, Griffin, Jeff Parles is the company today. A big show on the way. Every day is a big show. We've got our Autumn Windbags podcaster, Raiders kind of insider fan representative in RJ Clifford, a little bit of boxing and combat sports with RJ, who's an MMA insider. That's coming up in about 15 minutes. So right out of the gates, we got some interesting news with the Raiders. Listen, this is not major stuff, but for a team that can't run the ball and was hoping that Jaxon Powers-Johnson was going to be one of the starting guards or the center, he had a miss last week. It looks like, it appears, nothing's official, that he maybe had a concussion protocol. He didn't have the non-contact jersey on today, so just saw that report come across a little while ago. This line needs to get going, and Ashton Jeanty needs to get going, or this is going to be a very incomplete offense. And if the goal was to win 9 or 10 games and compete for a playoff spot, if you're going to be last or second to last in the league and running, you got no shot.
No chance, especially with the way that this roster is constructed. And the fact, too, that the defense as well can't be on the field as much as it was through these first few weeks. But, you know, it's good news to see JPJ back this week, hopefully. But you would imagine at some point that Jeanty just needs to break that one big one. And then it's just going to start flowing a little bit better.
We're going to hit what's happened with Jeanty so far in the 5 o'clock hour. You know, the internets, as I call them, are a weird place. I just opened up one of my pages, and usually it pops up to a weird one with MSN, believe it or not. And I guess that's Bing. And right out front, Kyler Murray, dog jersey. I'm like, we're doing this again? Yes, we are. Yes. Kyler Murray had to come out with an apology because he put out a picture of himself and his pit bull on Instagram. The dog was wearing a Michael Vick jersey. Are we serious that we need apologies on this?
Apparently so. I mean, you know, Griffin and I were talking about this a little bit before the show. Look, should Kyler have thrown it out there? Probably not. It's just not worth the aggravation that would come back.
The apology or the picture?
No, the picture, I'm saying, in the first place. Like,
do you think he did it on purpose?
Do I think he did it on purpose?
Do you think he actually processed, I'm going to put a Michael Vick jersey on a pit bull because I'm helping out Michael Vick, or he just said, hey, this is my favorite player, and I just happen to, you know,
I think it was the second thing. Like Kyler Murray obviously models his game the most after Michael Vick. I think it was just that more than anything. He just happened to be wearing the jersey, and his pit bull happened to be in the picture with him, and not that. Obviously, you all know what happened with Michael Vick 20 years ago.
Oh, by the way, I have this wrong. I mischaracterized this.
Murray's wearing the
jersey.
No,
I thought the dog had a freaking...
No, Murray's
wearing... Who cares? What are we doing here?
Murray.
This is insanity!
He didn't need to... Everyone didn't need to react in the way that they did. What, it was 20 years ago now with Vick, right?
That's the other question. Yeah. I was like, how long ago was that? And how old was Kyler Murray? Like...
What, Vic's big year in Philadelphia was 2011, and that was a few years after he had already gone to prison. So, yeah, it's like 18 years ago now with that incident with Michael Vick.
Man. Now, the flip side is, hey, that was a horrible, major moment in the history of sports and a major moment with an athlete who, I mean, I thought ridiculously got sent to the freaking penitentiary, got sent to Leavenworth. I mean, give me a break. And I said that at the time. I thought it was way overblown. I don't hate dogs. I don't want dogs fighting and dogs left for dead. But my Lord, we still remember it like this where, I was going to say the flip side is Kyler Murray stupid? He should know about this, but I guess I'm stupid because I might do it. Well, I'm not a pit bull guy. I don't get the pit bull people. I'm just going to dig myself deeper and deeper here.
Keep going.
But if you like pit bulls, that's fine. If you can control them, you know, I know it's all about the owner, right? You have to train it the right way. But I think we're in an era now, man. I mean, we're just looking for stuff.
Well, I mean, it's every walk of life at this point, right? It's not just something.
Vick jersey on an athlete with his pit bull in the picture, and he has to apologize. I don't know where we're going. To be honest, I like Charles Barkley's approach over the years, which is Barkley says stuff, gets in trouble all the time, and you know what he says in response when people get all worked up? Buzz off. Actually, he doesn't even respond most of the time. Or maybe sometimes he doubles down, but he just ignores it. And then people are like, oh, it's 3 days later? I found something else.
Blinders being on is always a good thing, right, Steve?
Griffin?
Yeah, we're slowly moving closer and closer to a got you culture. That's all everybody cares about. What can I do today to call out people who I see as in the wrong? So,
do you guys love dogs?
Love them.
Like, are you on the level of someone who would get really worked up over something like this?
Over this? No, I wouldn't get worked up over this, because does Kyler Murray do what Michael Vick did to the pit bulls back in the day? Of course not. Kyler Murray clearly loves his dog. So, like, who cares? A lot of noise. A lot of noise, Steve.
I feel more bad for Michael Vick, especially with him now coaching in college, hoping to, you know, perform in a way where he gets a big opportunity, and then something like this happens, and then people are just reminded about what happened 20-something years ago.
If you listen the other day, I think it was on Tuesday, mm-hmm. I brought it up on Monday. I brought up the VTech job and said, is Michael Vick a candidate to get the VTech job, or will the dog stuff keep him out of a job, you know, in Blacksburg in the ACC? Apparently, I guess it will. Maybe. If people get worked up over another football player wearing a Michael Vick jersey with his pit bull, I had the jersey on the pit bull. But if people
that's a good visual too.
I mean, right? I guess he's never getting an FBS job.
You know, and I don't know if I'm not willing to go that far, because let's just keep in mind, like, Michael Vick is the greatest athlete in the history of Virginia Tech. Period. There's no arguing that. And I mean, look, when your fan base is when your fan base and your administration, and a lot of people are assuming that Whit Babcock won't be there anymore, the AD, why not take the shot, especially if he has a good year at Norfolk State? I don't think this will play a role. I really don't.
Sorry, I keep cutting you off. He's not getting the VTech job. That would be ridiculous. He's got to coach for a lot longer. Yeah.
Well, that's
a big time job. They're not Colorado, where Colorado was in the doldrums and they needed a celebrity to come in and kind of raise all the money and the vision of the program.
I mean, being down 28-0 at halftime,
that's not good right
now.
It's
pretty bad.
but they have fans, and they have money, and they have support. It's not the same situation. Good news in, it's not done yet, but it looks like we, Las Vegas, are in negotiations with the NFL to host Super Bowl 63. That's 2029. So that moves us closer to what I think our goal should be, which is we absolutely have to be repping, hosting the NFL's championship game every 4 years. Let's go with a 4-year rotation. Give it to whoever else you want, but we get every fourth year.
I would have absolutely no issue with that, and obviously be great with the city. They just have to be – look, I'm in this camp, Cofield. Las Vegas, Miami, New Orleans, and then rotate it between a bunch of other cities. Those Vegas, Miami, and New Orleans should be in a rotation where they're getting it once every 3 years, once every 4 years, once every 5 years. Put the new stadiums in there, fine, but Vegas, Miami, New Orleans, those should be the three primary homes of the big game.
Here's my list.
Go ahead.
Vegas.
And only Vegas.
That's it.
I would have no problem with that either.
Well, I'll explain in a second why. I was reading one of the local Twitter accounts, and they were saying that in addition to negotiating for 2029, for Super Bowl 63, there's also the idea of Vegas is pitching that we have the game every year. Now, I don't think that'll happen, because I think the NFL uses the Super Bowl as a little bit of currency mm-hmm. to bribe some cities to get a new stadium. I'll tell you, I think who they're gonna bribe / threaten is one of the cities you mentioned. New Orleans can't host another Super Bowl until the Superdome is replaced with something more modern. It's not up to snuff. It's an old building. I love New Orleans, so I go there every year. I love it. I really love that city, but I could see them being like, hey, your stadium's just not new enough. And while Miami is nice, the problem with Miami, and I guess comparing it to Vegas because we have everything centralized, the problem with Miami is it is the most spread out place. I mean, San Fran, in many ways, is going to be a nightmare.
Of course.
Right? The stadium's in one spot. Everyone's going to want to be in San Francisco. I think for convenience, a lot of people are going to be in San Jose because that's kind of straight across, east to west. But Miami's, it's tough, man, because the headquarters are all over the place. Really, Lauderdale and Miami, and then South Beach is one of the headquarters. So, but I don't think they're going to pull it from them. But those are probably the only two cities in the rotation, unless they love L.A., and they love L.A. because, well, they were kind of headquartered there. I know now the NFL Network's with the ESPN. That stadium's, it's the best stadium in football, maybe. I think it's better than Jerry Dome.
The one other place I'll throw out there, because they're getting a new stadium, and it goes back to your point of its currency, the Super Bowl, Nashville's getting a new stadium,
yeah,
and a beautiful one at that.
They have to get at least one Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And then if they kill it, they might be in the rotation.
That's a pretty good place to have a big event like that.
Only risk, and they've been places where there's been weather. Only risk is there could be weather. Like Atlanta. Well, no, Atlanta was inside. The weather the week in Atlanta was terrible. It dropped down into the 20s and 30s. But
wasn't
Dallas week
bad too? Back in the day? Yeah.
I think Nashville's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Just, I don't know what their hotel room allotment is. I mean, we've got, what do we drop to? 153? We have 153,000 rooms here. And then once the guitar is up and everything else is open up, we'll be back at like 160,000 rooms.
Well, and also, too, remember when the game was here just a few years ago, it just was such a big hit for the media members, also. I mean, Radio Row is so
easy. Is that
the
most important thing?
For you and I, it is, right?
It was. we have time later on. I actually want to get in. Let's try to be objective. Jeff, let's try to be objective and talk about things that we need to improve on, because sure. I did hear some complaints about it, so we'll try to hit that a little later in the show. But reminder, we're heading towards the Dan Mullen Radio Show. That is tonight at 7 o'clock. The home of the Dan Mullen Radio Show is Parkway Tavern at 215 and Flamingo. During the show, $2 on the Miller Lights. They have happy hour during the week, 3 to 6. They've got a late night happy hour as well. For that one, they've got $2 off the beer, the wine, the cocktails. And 50%, I almost said $50 off the appetizers. That would be a pretty pricey appetizer. 50% off the appetizers like buffalo cauliflower, pulled pork sliders, Parkway nachos, which are really good. It's Parkway Tavern for the Dan Mullen Radio Show. Come over and check out the show at 7 o'clock.
It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
All right, Monday night, not the prettiest show for the Raiders. We know that the guys with the autumn windbags certainly had something to say. And now there's a big one coming up. Got the Commies hosting the Raiders on Sunday. RJ Clifford is in. RJ, I am going to start off in left field. This has no value to the audience, but it's just a pet peeve of mine. Your last podcast, was Mr. Wonderful in a car? Was he driving a pregnant wife to the hospital? I mean, what the hell, dude?
Well, we'll do whatever is necessary and whatever it takes.
That's a good glass half full view of it, yes. That's a good glass half full.
We'll do whatever it takes, right? Come hell or high water, we will make sure it happens. He has to be inside of his car, dodging like FedEx delivery trucks, almost taking out of his rearview mirror. Then, yeah, that's what we're going
to
do.
All right. Well, I figured maybe he just jumped in the car for the last couple of days to soothe himself after what was a kind of a rough game. I'll start off positively. I thought the defense played really well. I have some hopes for the defense. The back end has looked better. I think the defensive line has the chance to be incredible. And aside from the 60-yard pop to Quentin Johnson, I thought the D did a good job.
Yeah, if you'd have told me, you know, preseason that this defense was going to have to carry a bad offense, I would have said you're nuts, right? These DBs we thought would be a major issue, major liability for the Raiders, and they've more than held their own despite being young and kind of all thrown together. We knew the defensive line would be quality, and they've continued to deliver. But, yeah, I mean, you know, that's what you're going to get with Geno Smith. You're going to get some terrible eggs laid every now and then. You're going to get a couple of those every single season. And luckily we got one out of the way early, even though it was on prime time against a division opponent.
What, RJ, what did you think of the play calling from Chip Kelly? Did you think it was just
atrocious?
Okay, so bad.
Hold back.
he got so hot and bothered by Geno Smith's long bombs in week one that he's just like, oh, we're just going to do that all the time. I said preseason, I was like, look, I can't guarantee the Raiders are going to go from the worst rushing attack in football to a really good one. But I can guarantee it'll be at least fun. Like, that's been Chip Kelly's MO. That it's been at least fun. Misdirection, guards pulling. Where was that? Where was all of that? Like Chip Kelly got completely bamboozled by the Chargers' defensive coordinator. It was like, they're in Tampa 2 the entire time, too deep. They're like, okay, we're going to dare you to do anything but throw deep. And they just kept throwing deep. It was bad by both guys.
You guys had a pie of blame, basically, for the offensive performance. So who's in the pie?
We like to make things as food-related as possible with our NFL analysis. But it was basically what we said, right? It was Chip and Geno. There was, you know, when you don't score a single touchdown in a professional football game, there's a lot of blame to go around. So You know, the offensive line, the interior offensive line has been playing terribly. The Ashton Jeanty, I think they had a couple pretty good runs, but he had some terribly bad missed assignments. He went the wrong way in a run play. He missed a couple pass blocking assignments. Other than Jacoby Myers, it was tough for receivers to get separation. But even when the blocking was decent and there was an open wide receiver, Geno Smith missed it. There's plenty of blame to go around, but it's mostly Geno and Chip.
Just I want to go to one drive, which was the marathon 11-minute 19 play field goal drive to make a closer two possession game. RJ, what the heck was that? That's the only way I can put it. What the heck was that whole thing? And especially taking the points in that spot from Carroll after your team had been on the field for that long.
I mean, it was damned if you do, damned if you don't, right? What was it, 4th and 11 or 4th and 12?
I think it was 4th and 10.
4th and 10, right? So it's, yeah. I mean, yeah, you go to an 11-point game, right, where you can get a field goal and a touchdown, 2 points. I'm with you, though, right? Like, there was no good decision. But that's the irony of this whole thing, is the second that the Raiders and Chip Kelly put together a drive that they should have been doing since the first quarter when the Chargers just went too deep the entire time, it's too late. You're behind by two scores. You can't put together a 15-minute drive. You got to start throwing deep. And so that's when they finally do it, was when it was too late. I mean, I want to give the Chargers defensive coordinator a lot of credit, but they're just stacked, man. They're just so – even losing their all-star defensive end, Khalil Mack, they were – that's a good defense, man. That's one of the best in football.
RJ Clifford's up on ESPN Las Vegas. He's got his podcast, The Autumn Windbags. Chargers, best team in the division, or you want to wait?
I think so, right? I mean, you've got the Chiefs are 0-2, right? Like, how ballsy can we say that they're still what we think they were? And then obviously, I think the ball's going to drop on the Broncos offense. I think it's kind of been figured out a little bit. The defense in Denver, I think, could make them a real contender to win the AFC West, but I'm telling you, man, I thought Jim Harbaugh would come in here and just really hardball the Chargers. Greg Roman's would just hardball the Chargers offense, and it's not. They're just like, hey, we have Justin Herbert, one of the most talented defenses in football. Like, why mess with it? Why get cute?
Are the Chiefs the worst team in the division?
No, it's still the Raiders. It's still the Raiders until proven otherwise. It's still the Raiders until proven otherwise. I mean, I've said before, I think the Raiders will double their win total from last season to still have a losing record at 8-9. And I see no reason to change that. They still have the sixth most cap space in football. It's one of the youngest teams in football. I think this is a growing year for the Raiders, and the next season we go all in.
RJ, let's go to Sunday. Of course, we don't know if Jaden Daniels is going to play. If he is, he's going to be compromised. Of course, Raiders coming off a short week, traveling across the country. What are we looking at here in this one?
Offensively, I have no clue. Remember preseason, it was Geno Smith in a dome. He's unbelievable. So he played East Coast in bad weather, New England. He's amazing in a dome at home on primetime, and he lays an egg. So now we're going, okay, back in a dome, East Coast outside. What kind of Geno are we going to get? I have no clue whatsoever. Defensively, I like where we're at. If Jaden Daniels does play, he's going to be a little hobbled. He won't have the wheels that he normally does. And that's going to be rough. I mean, the Raiders could have had 7 sacks on Monday night if Justin Herbert didn't put on a Superman cape and start running around and just avoiding all that pressure. So I think it's going to be another really, really good showing from the Raiders defensively. But offensively, does Chip figure it out? Does Ashton Jeanty get going? Do they go back to week one Geno Smith? Tune in.
I saw some people complaining, believe it or not, about the way Max Crosby is being used because he's not getting enough sacks. I think the way they're using him is incredible because now he's kind of a utility guy on the line and he's filling all these different roles. And I thought he was a big part of just blowing up almost all of what Herbert was doing. If they wanted to push the ball down the field, they couldn't because he was disrupting for himself or someone else. They never got the run game going because his get-off was ridiculous.
Yeah, Geno Smith leads the league in interceptions. Chip Kelly refuses to adjust, and it's Max's fault. Okay, yeah, go ahead. Yeah, that makes total sense.
Well, I think they were actually there was a site that was saying, "Hey, put him back in his traditional role. He should be getting more sacks. He should be about pass pressure." But I think they're missing the fact of how disruptive he's being and how much he's helping the offense. Oh, I'm sorry, the defense. So really, it was another, you know, pointing the finger at maybe Patrick Graham and Carroll.
His pass rush win rate is the best that it has been in his career. He is in the backfield. He is disrupting. And I even saw people complain that he dropped into coverage a couple times. And it's like two or three times a game, it makes sense. Because if that he's getting double and triple teamed every single time. No offensive coordinator. You should be immediately fired if you're consistently making Max Crosby defended one-on-one. And so when you've got two and a half, three guys on one player, you have those guys standing there like statues as he drops back and you bring pressure on the other side. So look, normally you just let Max Crosby hunt. Just let the dog off his leash and have him just rain hellfire on the offense. But every now and then, he's the decoy, and you let someone else get some glory.
RJ Clifford's with us. He does the Autumn Windbags podcast. Check it out with Mr. Wonderful, a great Raiders voice. He's here every week on Cofield & Company on ESPN Las Vegas. We got to kind of close out with a down note, but I did want you to talk about this because you were around the guy a lot more than I was. Tom Gerbese was a legendary sports writer in the combat field. You know, beyond that, he was just a great guy. My first recollection when I saw that he had passed away was that guy was nice every time I was around him. And you don't have to be nice to me. Like, he was always in a freaking good mood. And then what I loved was all these people pouring onto Twitter, and they told the same story. Like, 80% of them were like, that guy Tom Gerbese gave me my first shot. And it wasn't one. It was like 15 different people that I saw who were like, he got me in the biz.
I've been in this business almost 20 years now, and he was the OG when I got into the business. And you will not find one person in the media or otherwise to say a bad thing about Gerbese. And you know how hard it is, Cofield, to have any member of the media have universal 100% coverage of adoration. That is exactly who he was as a father, as a grandfather, as a colleague. He genuinely loved combat sports. He was one of the very original guys. You remember this, Cofield, when everyone in boxing is like, ew, UFC, icky, this is terrible. He crossed over very early and said, fighters are fighters, and I want to tell their stories, whether the gloves are 12 ounces or 4 ounces. Taken away from us far too soon. And if anyone listening to me right now runs across anyone working in MMA or boxing, it's worth buying a beer for whoever that is and say, tell me your best Gerbese story, because everyone has.
Crazy enough, he just had a book drop like 4 days ago. So get up to Amazon, search Tom Gerbese, Gerbasi, and buy his book, contribute, because I'm sure his family can use the funding, but pretty tragic. All right, RJ, we appreciate it, buddy. We'll talk to you.
Later.
Tom Gerbese, good dude, and like I said, that's a legacy when people can talk about you, and in his case, going way too soon, but as a guy who was a conduit to let all these people into the combat sports business, which getting into the media is not easy, and Tom did that for a lot of people.
Now back to Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Rolling towards some UNLV football talk in about 15 minutes. Conversation with Jake Pope, safety, as UNLV's had a long layoff here. They head to Miami of Ohio, a MAC school in Oxford, Ohio. So Jake Pope will give us a preview of that. And also the football player experience in Vegas is unlike anywhere else in the country. So he'll talk about that Canelo-Crawford fight. I think the experience in Boulder, Colorado, from what I've heard, is pretty cool. You know, Colorado's a good school to go to, and I'm sure in this era, things have gotten better for all the players, because there was an era 30, 35 years ago where maybe it wasn't the nicest place for some African-Americans to go to school. But Dion has certainly brought the program back, and they're making money, and they're getting applications. And bottom line, the school's there to make money, do its research, educate the kids, try to have a winning football program. So Prime has done that. I've had my doubts about what this is going to look like long-term. Apparently, Colorado didn't have any doubts because in March, they signed him to an extension that takes him through 2029, because there were some threats, like he may go somewhere else. I don't believe that anyone else is going to hire him anytime soon. But they bumped him to like $10, $12 million a year. And now without his son, Dion, that is called Dion Shador. without his son, Shador, now he has a question at quarterback. I don't know if he's handling this the right way. I am a fan of stability at quarterback. He's got three. I'm not going to use the cheesy line about, you know, having three doesn't mean or means you don't have one. He's going to go back to Caden Salter, who I think should have been the quarterback the whole time. He's a transfer in from Liberty. Lots of schools wanted him. Julian Lewis, a top five quarterback recruit, is on that team. In this last class, he was a top five. They played the kid Staub last, you know, game and a half, game and a quarter. It's kind of ugly. And it doesn't look like he's real sturdy in his decision making.
Not one bit. And I'll just say this. I loved Caden Salter at Liberty. I thought he was clearly the best quarterback in that league. Now, of course, going from CUSA all the way up to the Big 12 is a big leap.
But like the Big 12 stuff doesn't even really come into effect yet. They haven't played the Big 12 schedule, so the lack of patience early.
And
like, bro, you brought him in. He's a veteran quarterback. Let him play.
And that's the point. Like, okay, so he didn't play great against Georgia Tech. You know what? Georgia Tech might be really good. That's the one thing. And then I don't know why, again, the Delaware game was such a weird game, even though I somehow got there covering the number in that game. But it's and then last week, like, they're on a Friday night, so everybody watched them against Houston, and they looked terrible except for the second quarter. They played a great second quarter, but that was it. And it was like, why is this stomp guy in there? Why? He's clearly the third most talented quarterback on this roster. I don't think Lewis is ready to play yet, but we know he's more talented. And Salter, we've seen be a successful college starting quarterback. I mean, look, they're struggling yards per play. They're struggling yards per game. They're struggling to score right now. And look, you get Wyoming this week. Wyoming, probably a good time to see Wyoming after Wyoming just got physically battered by Utah in the second half last week. But you got to get this thing figured out quickly, and at least for Colorado's sake, it's a good thing they went back to Salter because he shouldn't have been benched in the first place.
On the surface, I think Wyoming would be worth the play, but I swear every time last year I bailed on Colorado, they came up with a big effort. So yeah. I don't know that I'm going to play this, but they're laying 13.5, and not only did Wyoming appear to, you know, get battered by Utah, their offense has been kind of lackluster.
Season. They've been struggling offensively, to put it politely. But I mean, that's a pretty brutal road spot for Wyoming. After, I mean, that was 3-0 at halftime against Utah. They were in that game, and then Utah just woke up in the second half. Boy, Utes have a pretty darn big one this weekend.
Well, first, do you want to take Wyoming?
I would lay it. I would lay 13.5. If we get north of 14, I would take it. But, boy, I just don't know how Wyoming's going to score in that game. And I know Colorado's defense, I mean, giving up 30-plus to that version of Houston, even though they're vastly improved from a year ago. But I'm concerned about how Wyoming's going to score in that game. There's just too many athletes, even with the problems on defense on that Colorado side of the ball.
Jeff Parles in as the company. He's from South Point Studios. It's Cofield, ESPN Las Vegas. I mean, are these the top four teams that are squaring off in the Big 12? Who am I missing? Texas Tech, Utah, Arizona State, Baylor. I think it's a very balanced conference, so there could be another four teams.
Clones are the only other one that you could consider. But I have these four as my best four teams in this league. And
Week four, and they're squaring off. I love the Big 12. I think the Big 12 is the most fun conference because outside of about two teams, I think everyone's pretty competitive. And here's the thing. In this group, Texas Tech, Utah, Arizona State, Baylor, one of them could finish 7th or 8th. I don't know yet.
Easily. And Arizona, look, Baylor already has a loss. Arizona State already has a loss, but there were two SEC teams. Of course, Auburn, I think Auburn I have as a top 10 team. And then
you do?
I do. I do.
Ooh,
I
am. That's a little window into Auburn, Oklahoma.
Yeah.
Before we get to that.
Sure. For these two games, first off, I know that Fox doesn't care, but really, we're making Texas Tech and Utah play at 10 a.m. local time in Salt Lake City? That's just ridiculous in every which way. And that's part of the reason I love Utah. I think Utah, this after last year, which was just, for especially by Whittingham standards, that was an embarrassment last year. Like, Cam Rising was questionable every game, even though we knew he wasn't going to play it, and he finally played and then got hurt again. And now Utah seems to have their mojo back with, hey, we are just going to run the ball and we are going to grind you to a pulp after 60 minutes. And Texas Tech hasn't played anyone. This is a whole different level of physicality. And Rice-Eccles is such a difficult place to go win on the road, especially in a conference game like this. I like Utah. And in the other game, boy, if you told me Arizona State went down there and won by two touchdowns, I wouldn't be shocked. If you told me Sawyer Robertson continues his hot play to begin the year and Arizona State can't get stops and Baylor wins and Baylor ends up being that Cinderella team in the Big 12 this year, wouldn't be shocked one bit. I would lean to the home team. I think Baylor is better than Arizona State at the moment because Robertson is playing as well as anyone in the country.
Auburn, top 10.
Yeah.
Really, Jeff Pearls?
Yeah.
Top 10.
Yeah.
So then they're covering against Oklahoma.
I have them winning. I have them winning outright. Yeah. I have them winning outright. That's the bit. That's the nice sized upset here this week. There's two reasons I have that result. Number one, look, I don't care about Hugh Freeze the person. Doesn't matter to me. Hugh Freeze the football coach, when he has the team he wants to have and trusts his quarterback, we saw it at Ole Miss. I mean, he beat Saban twice. He was really successful at Ole Miss. And he has his guy in Jackson Arnold who is playing under control. He's not being asked to do too much like Oklahoma asked him to last year. And I like Auburn. That is a really good offense going against the Oklahoma defense that I don't think is quite as good as it's shown so far this year. I mean, Sharon Moore didn't trust Underwood to throw the ball at all in that big game. The other opponents have been ridiculous opponents. I mean, come on. Oklahoma playing at Temple last year? I mean, are we serious with that? Last week, I should say? Like, what is that road trip? What are we doing here? And I love what I've seen from Mateer so far, but we saw him at Wazoo last year. When he started in the one game he played against a high-end opponent in Boise State, he looked awful in that game. And they haven't played a high-end defense. I know people love Michigan's defense. I don't think it's that good. This defense for Auburn is good. I like Auburn outright. I think they're going to control a low-scoring game that doesn't see a lot of possessions.
We'll get to the Aces in a little bit. They got a 6:30 start going down tonight to try to get out of that series against Seattle. At William Hill, they are 8.5. Versus the total's 159.5. 8.5 seems big. If you want to bet it, well, you can certainly go into a William Hill full service book or do the best thing, and that's sign up for a William Hill Nevada mobile sports account, and you can earn up to a $250 bonus bet after placing your first qualifying wager that allows you to bet on the go from the iPhone, the iPad, the Android. Sign up today. You never miss another bet. Great wagering menu, deep wagering menu, same game parlays, early cash out, live in play on all the major sports. Hell, last week they were booking some badminton. I didn't get into that one. For more information, visit williamhill.us.
It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
It's part of Cofield and Company. It's brought to you by Ellis Island. That's our home for Monday Night Football. We're out there with the 3-6 show and then 6-8, we're hosting the party. That is a mega Monday. You can get the big 50-ounce cocktails, buy one, get one, and a great happy hour leading into and into the game every day. That goes down from Monday through Friday, 4 to 7. $5 on the Ellis Island Craft Drafts, $7 cocktails, and then $7 bites. I had a chance to start the preview for UNLV at Miami of Ohio on Monday after practice. Caught up with a veteran safety in from Alabama and Georgia, Jake Pope, who is on the Rebels. And, you know, part of the story with this football team and recruiting to the school is the experience you get in Vegas, which is sometimes you get to go to big events that you would never see anywhere else. And football players from UNLV were at the Canelo Crawford fight. And I asked Jake Pope, did you go?
I did. Yeah, it was actually my first fight. Super, super cool. And Canelo, I've been a big fan of since I was little. You know, I like watching boxing and UFC. And we had some really good seats. So it was cool to see.
Why are you a big fan, or have you been a big fan of Canelo?
I just, you know, he was a legend growing up. I like his head movement. I always liked the way he would weave punches. And, you know, he's just a legend, man. It's like me liking Tom Brady. You know, I just got too much respect for the guy in the boxing world. So it was cool to see him in person.
What do you think of Terrence Crawford?
He's a real deal. Probably one of the best ever. You know, Canelo's a little old, so it was kind of hard for him to keep up with Crawford. But, you know, they both had a really good fight.
So you were downstairs?
Yeah, we were like section one, almost like one row up from the floor, which was super cool.
Did you see any celebrities?
Yeah, they put him up on the cam. I saw Mike Tyson, a couple actors. Mark Wahlberg was there. The Prince of Saudi Arabia was there. You know, a bunch of people were there. That was a big fight.
So you enjoyed yourself.
Yeah.
How many of the players got to go? Was it only the vets?
There was a lot, actually. I think they gave us 30 to 40 tickets. So there were some players, some coaches, some people from the staff. So it was cool to kind of have everyone in one section.
Does that matter to players? Like we've talked about the benefits of Vegas. Like, can you use that in recruiting? And you can't promise anything in terms of events. Right. But hey, every once in a while, we get to do this. You can't do that anywhere else.
Yeah, with Vegas being there's so much to do out here. You know, perks like this will come up. I know we've gotten to go to the UFC before. I didn't get to go personally, but some of the guys got to go. You know, they always have stuff going on, so they try to let us go sometimes when we have some time.
If I remember correctly, and we're with Jake Pope, I thought you had mentioned hitting the strip for some meals, which again is another perk. So what have you hit that you really liked?
My favorite restaurant is Amaya. That's one of my favorites. It's in the Cosmo. It's like a Mexican place, but kind of bougie Mexican.
Okay.
It's really good. They have seafood too. And then a hole in the wall place I like is the Taco Stand. I don't know if you know about that place. Best tacos I've ever had. They actually shave off the meat off this like meat wheel. And it's just all fresh. It's all good. It's cheap too. It's like $4 a taco, not even $3.
Do they have bougie Mexican in Athens or in Tuscaloosa?
No, a little different type of Mexican. They actually have queso back in the South. They don't really have like the cheese dip here. So it's all just, you know, shredded cheese and whatnot, which I wish we had queso here, but it's better here. Better here.
Jake Pope's with us. So tell me about team building activities off the field with your group. What have you guys done? Did you do anything last week?
One of our, you know, things that we like to do is go to eat every Thursday as a DB group. Other than that, coach will sometimes take us to eat. We've gone bowling. Obviously, during game weeks, we'll go see movies on Fridays, which is cool as a team. Coach Mullen will take us. So we'll try to do some things here and there.
Can anyone actually bowl?
I can bowl.
You can?
Yeah.
What are we talking about?
I can bowl. Like 180. 180
really?
Around there, like 170. On a good day. That's on a good day.
Okay.
You know, I'm not a big gutter ball guy. I've gotten my throw a little bit
I'm
shorter.
Not a big gutter ball guy. By the way, lefty.
Righty. I would be a gutter guy if I was a lefty, for sure.
Jake Pope is up on ESPN Las Vegas in the Ted Wiens pregame show. Tell me what you learned from UCLA as a defensive back group, especially in the second half when they started moving the ball.
Right. You know, like I said, we just – have to lessen the penalties and get off the field, you know, when we deserve to. Don't give them extra yards or give them extra plays because those can obviously be huge drive extenders. But, you know, like I said, I think we played great collectively. We fought. They had to work for every touchdown, every point they got. You know, you would see 12, 13 play drives. You know, we're trying to stand up for ourselves. And I think that's going to be great for us to carry on throughout the year as a defense.
As a group, you guys have a role, you certainly do, in run stop. And at Sam Houston, they went right down the field.
Yeah.
And I remember hearing eye discipline, you know, eye discipline. So explain eye discipline and maybe how you guys are going to get better at that.
Oh, you know, like you said, it's just being very disciplined with your eyes, knowing when to key run, when to key pass, what your run fit is, you know, reading the quarterback's arm slot. And just it's very small things, but it carries a long way. And especially at DB, it's the biggest for DBs, you know. You know, reading run pass, reading the receiver's route, having a trigger on run two. You know, and we're going to obviously improve with that as the year goes. It's very important. So,
both you and Dan Mullen in the press conference today said Miami run stuff. They don't run a lot, but what they run is good. As a defender, would you rather go against a team that doesn't run a lot? Or what is it like facing a team that is running a bunch of different options?
You know, I think if a team is gritty and has the effort, I think they can run whatever they like. Obviously, you got to establish your run first, and then maybe you can open the field up. You know, we would obviously put more defense in if they're running more, you know, but you can kind of lessen what you do if they lessen what they do, which makes us play faster at the end of the day. So it'll be a huge benefit for us.
Jake Pope is with us. Last couple things. Scout team is really important, and it's one of those things we never talk about. Who is out there trying to kind of replicate what Finn does at quarterback for you guys?
We got a couple guys. It's actually Sebastian right now, one of our freshman quarterbacks. You know, like I said, day one, you know, I didn't really get to see too much. We were kind of, you know, a little lackadaisical today. But hopefully he'll get out the pocket for us and let us, you know, break on him and stuff. The receivers, we got RJ wearing number 8 to number 2. I know he's one of their better receivers, so we're going to try to hone in on him this week, just like the quarterback.
How much scout did you play at Alabama and Georgia? How important was it there? And what happens when coaches see you not busting hump on the scout team?
Oh, I'll tell you what. Scout team for me was the most important thing in my career by far. You know, I tell them, and there was no, you know, jogging around out there. You know, when I was with Coach Saban and Coach Kirby, you know, that's like a game, you know, and they're over with us, you know, trying to get us right over there, making sure we're going full speed. And it was the best reps I ever got going against Jahmyr Gibbs and Bryce Young and so many great receivers. It only made me a better player. But it's all about how you take it in and what you do with it. You know, if you want to go out there and waste your time and not get better for a whole year, then you know that's on you. I think it's very important to go out there and bust your balls on scout team.
I think it's important to shout guys out too, because Feminu, I talked to him last week, and of all the guys he brought up, because I asked him, hey, who are the edges who are giving you problems?
Yep.
He's like, let me tell you, Kenji Scanlon.
Yep.
He's like, that guy's going to be a good player. And then scout, man, he's really good.
Yep. No doubt. And like I said, you know, if you're doing great on scout team, it's only a matter of time before you get your shot. And you're going to be a lot more ready than the guys that didn't give a crap about scout team, you know. So Kenji's one of those guys. You know, I know he comes to work every day. It's going to be huge for us in the near future.
So, all right, Jake. We appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
There is a veteran safety, although has eligibility left. Jake Pope in from Alabama and Georgia, off to a good start. The defense off to a solid start at times. They're going against an interesting spot here, Miami of Ohio, on the road. Reminder, Monday Night Football, Ellis Island. When you go out there, we'll be out there from 3 to 8. Make sure you open your Boomers account, your Boomer Sportsbook. Two locations in town in Southern Nevada, Ellis Island and Casino Valley Verde. Minus 105 on all pro football spreads for every regular season game. They've got a first deposit match up to $250 in bonus bets. You refer a friend. Oh, I can do that. I should get credit for everyone who's I'm not going to get credit. Refer a friend, you get a $20 bonus. And then once your account is verified, you can actually put cash in at places like CVS, 7-Eleven, Walmart, and some other joints around town using the Pay Near Me feature. Easy, easy sign up. Really takes, if you do it at home, you go, it takes less than 3 minutes. So sign up, Boomers Sportsbook. I love, during a football season, being able to shout out practice squad players. I know no one watching college football, almost no one, thinks about it. One, they're really important in the scout and running what the other team runs. But in this case, as you heard, I asked James Famenu, one of the tackles, I was like, you know, who's giving you trouble in practice? And he mentions a guy that I mean, I see practice. He's new to the team, 6'2", 245. I think he's, I'll have to look up where he's from. Kenji Scanlon, and he's like, yeah, that guy. Practice squad is important.
Oh, yeah, it is. I mean, when I was at the University of Utah, we each week, you know, you had your offensive player of the game, your defensive player of the game. Then we also had scout team players of the week. And it's important to shout those guys out because that it adds the motivation for those guys to work their way up into the starting lineups, to the travel squad. You really need good guys on the practice squad in order to build a good team.
20 seconds. You get any thoughts on UNLV and Miami? 2.5?
Bizarre spot. Rebels are much better, but we'll see how the travel goes against the team looking for their first win.
I think you nailed it. That's the biggest factor, right? You mentioned the 10 a.m. start in Salt Lake for Texas Tech.
Yeah.
And Utah. Now UNLV is going to do a 9 a.m. kickoff.